Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. As Kiev's counteroffensive grinds to a halt, NATO says the West must prepare for a long war. NATO's goal, according to its head Stoltenberg, is Russia's military defeat. This is a policy choice, and it is Ukraine paying the price for such a craven decision. Crosstalking NATO and Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest Daniel McAdams in Lake Jackson. He's executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. In Washington, we have Wilmer Leon. He is a political scientist, author, and radio talk show host. And in Brunswick, we have Bruce Gagnon. He is the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Daniel, let me go to you first in Lake Jackson. I guess, you know, Stoltenberg has been speaking a lot of truth lately after lying so much for his career. He's basically said, yeah, our expansion of the alliance, NATO, into Ukraine prompted this military conflict. That was foreboding to say about 15 minutes ago, okay? And now he's saying it's going to be a long war. The West must prepare for a long war. I don't get this, Daniel. What about achieving peace? They all talk about war, and they don't talk about peace. Go ahead.
Well, Stoltenberg is an amazing piece of work, isn't he? I mean, he's a string of absolute empty platitudes, punctuated occasionally by a couple of truths. And we've seen, as you mentioned, over this past week, a couple of big truths. And the one you mentioned was a big one, where he said, hey, this war could have been avoided. They told us if we didn't put NATO on their doorstep, they wouldn't have attacked. Ha ha, well, we showed them, didn't we? Now they have NATO on their doorstep. And meanwhile, 500,000 people are dead. So it just shows the cravenness of Stoltenberg, who's not the head of anything. All he is a puppet of Washington, D.C. So they talk about war. He talks about war, of course, from the comfort of Brussels, not understanding or not really giving a damn about what's going on the ground in there. And, of course, as Ukraine continues to slowly lose the war, now they're desperate to extend it and have the long war, because the long war is meant to prevent the rest of the world from seeing who started the war in the first place.
You know, Bruce, they talk about, they bandy about all of the numbers. You know, by the way, hold on to your wallets, everyone. Zelensky's in Washington. About the cost of the war, I'd be very curious, in comments below later, what percentage of the money you think ends up back into the suburbs of Washington, D.C.? Bruce.
I think it has to be a high percentage.
Yeah, me too.
It's like Afghanistan. Afghanistan was a washateria for laundering money through Afghanistan and back into the hands of major elites, weapons corporations, banksters, and the rest. And they view Russia in this case as a real long-term war. The real goal is to take over Russian resources. Don't we know by now that all Western wars, US, NATO, UK, all their wars are about resources, grabbing resources, and Russia has too much of them, according to the United States. And so this is what it's really all about. And money can be made along the way as the taxpayers of the United States and NATO countries are fleeced.
Well, Wilmer, let's talk about the costs here, because it's so easy for Stoltenberg and Biden and the rest of them to sacrifice Ukrainian lives. I mean, it is really quite extraordinary. You know, in preparing for this program, I was talking to my editor and just saying the loss of 71,000 troops over a course of a few short weeks. It's extraordinary how callous these people are. Wilmer.
Well, they can be incredibly callous because this is not an organic conflict. It is a proxy conflict. So, and what I mean by that is Ukraine is not in control of anything. Zelensky cannot negotiate. Zelensky cannot sit down and talk with anybody other than Stoltenberg and Biden. And so the United States is in this until the last Ukrainian dies. And when that is the mindset, then you know, the United States can print more dollars. That's what the United States does. So this is a money laundering scheme. It is for the benefit of Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and Boeing and so many others in the military industrial complex. So again, because it's if this were the Ukraine actually fighting Russia, then when Boris Johnson went Zelensky wanted to actually sit down and negotiate back in April
negotiating. They weren't going to sit down. They were negotiating. Keep going.
And Boris Johnson came in and told him, under no circumstances is the West going to allow you to do this. So again, it's not organic. It is a proxy conflict. And unfortunately, Zelensky's doing the job he's been hired to do.
Yeah, Daniel, I mean, I'm glad this Istanbul process is being brought up here, because if you really think about it, and it's really tragic when you come to the conclusion that if the Zelensky regime had accepted what was being discussed in Istanbul, he was essentially giving away what he didn't have, the Donbass and Crimea. That is going to be a historical oddity to think about for a very long time. Daniel.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what the final agreement would have looked like. And of course, at least they were talking. But I mean, in my opinion, Putin was in no mood to get another Minsk 3. You know, he's already been there. He's done that. He knew by then that Merkel had admitted that the whole thing was a ruse. So I think Zelensky's signature on paper would not have been enough. But at least with the door open, you would have seen a movement toward, once war starts, war takes on a life of its own, as we know. But there was a chance to stop it without. But there have been 5 or 6 or 7 chances to stop it without the war.
Exactly. And Bruce, again, Anthony Blinken says that Russia is rejecting, quote, meaningful diplomacy. Well, that's not true at all. The door is open. Now, the terms and conditions of what the Russians want are very clear. A change in the European security architecture. You never hear that in the mainstream, okay? He wants to rebuild the Soviet Union. He wants to go to Poland. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. Okay, Bruce, go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. It's always blame Russia for everything. And that's their MO. Right now, I believe that the West is trying to widen the war into the Arctic region, number one, into Poland, into Moldova, even Armenia. So they're really working hard to widen the war in order to extend it and bleed Russia as much as possible. You know, most people don't know that the week before the special military operation began in February of 2022. The U.S. and NATO held a war game called Cold Response on the Russia-Norway border, just a few miles from the Russian border in Norway. And so it's very clear that when the special military operation began, Putin understood that these people in the West were out to get Russia. They were out to balkanize it, break it up into different small countries so the West would control resource extraction, especially in the Arctic region, as the ice is melting. This is their pure agenda, and they can't let go of it. They're rolling the dice, thinking, who's going to stop us? We're going to keep going. We're going to bleed our countries. All part of this global reset from Schwab. But anyway, this is where it's at. The more they can widen the war, the more profits, and the longer this thing will go on.
Yeah, Wilmer, it's really interesting. I like, throwing the dice, because they got snake eyes, okay? The Russian economy didn't collapse. The Russian military didn't collapse in Ukraine. Every single gambit they try blows up in their face, but not for them personally, but for everyone else that is a target. Go ahead, in Washington.
And what's also very interesting and intriguing is we keep seeing President Putin as a statesman. Look at the Russia-Africa summit. Look at the fact that President Putin is, I believe now they're saying he's going to Beijing was shortly to meet with President Xi. There have been a number of world leaders that are coming to Russia through BRICS and through other organizations to meet with him, to meet with Secretary Lavrov, because Russia is now economically gaining position and the United States is losing position. And I wrote a piece a while ago called The Non-Aligned Nations Realign. And this had to do with the reality that we're seeing relationships with Iran and Venezuela. We've got President Maduro going to China. All of these world leaders are coming together, engaging in economic and trade and other types of discussions in response to the American sanctions regime and America's militarism. And so the very guy that Joe Biden told us would have his economy crumble, people would be in the streets, and they'd throw him out of office, he has just become an even more significant player on the world stage.
Yeah, but Daniel, that makes the U.S. far more dangerous on the global stage. You know, hegemons don't like hearing the word no. Daniel.
Yeah, neocons don't like hearing the word reverse. So that's why we're in the problem. You know, the worst thing about this, Peter, is that, you know, you call this the long war, and this is what Stoltenberg said. It's going to be a long war. But to me, the most sickest and most cynical thing about this is that Washington knew all along that this counteroffensive would not succeed.
Exactly.
And we know this from the April release that the military intelligence in the United States, from those stolen documents, they knew it would not succeed. The U.S. would never undertake a military operation in the condition that the Ukrainian army was, and America's experts knew it. But what we saw in Iraq, which is that only the selected intelligence was stovepiped upstairs to the president. This is what we're seeing here with this war. You have the Secretary of State, you have the National Security Advisor. They are stovepiping intelligence
Daniel, I gotta jump in here. We're gonna go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine and NATO. Stay with RT.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. Joining you, we're discussing NATO and Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Bruce in Brunswick. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, we've all over the last couple of years tried, you know, since 2014, the illegal transfer of power from a democratically elected government in Ukraine to the present. What is this era, the new Cold War? I think we're going to still have to come up with a term. But if it is the new Cold War, it's the West that has created it. I mean, look at the stories, you know, taking cars and cell phones away from Russians in the EU that are lawfully there. They have visas. They're not illegal immigrants. Or whatnot, freezing of bank accounts, selling off of assets. I mean, what kind of Western values are these, Bruce?
They're provocative Western values. It's all about provoking Russia to get them to take a step that would allow NATO to justify expanding the war. In the coming weeks, the U.S. and NATO are going to be running air, land, and sea war games, even into the Black Sea. U.S. and NATO warships plan to go into the Black Sea. It's all about provoking Russia, showing that NATO is the boss. But you know what? Even in Europe, the concern about this war is spreading. Just this past weekend, there was a massive demonstration in Prague in the Czech Republic and Germany as well. So protests are growing throughout Europe as their economies are faltering because of Western sanctions that have blown back on the European economy. And people understand that their countries are being hollowed out to pay for this provocation against Russia that could lead to a hot war, not a cold war, but a hot war, because we're talking the red hot flash of nuclear war if things keep going the way they're going now.
Absolutely. And I mean, the oddity, historically speaking, if we use the original Cold War as a template, great powers, the superpowers, never antagonize the other one directly. They're doing it now. Nuclear powers are not supposed to do that. And that's what we're seeing now. And it's very, very dangerous here. Well, let me go back to you in Washington. One of the, maybe I can ask all three of you, has there ever been an election in the Western world on the Ukraine war? Has anyone voted on it ever? All through Europe, North America? G7. No, there's a huge democratic deficit when it comes to this. No one ever asks the people. Go ahead, in Washington.
No one ever asks the people. It is used as a talking point. It is used as a rallying cry, but it's not ever been put to a vote. And, you know, you asked, Peter, you asked the question a little earlier about the values. Well, these are the values of imperialism. These are the values of militarism. These are the values of capitalism, unbridled, and empire. And you mentioned also earlier that Stoltenberg has said that the West must prepare for a long war. Well, understanding that Stoltenberg does not control NATO, that the United States does, Stoltenberg was actually reading the script. So he's not telling the West to prepare. The West is telling the world to prepare for a very long war. And if you then also throw the U.S. Contrived conflict over Taiwan into the mix, the United States is creating an incredibly untenable reality.
Well, yeah, but see, Daniel, I think one of the most interesting takeaways from this entire awful experience is that we see the rise of the global South. I mean, the global majority. I mean, they're making it very, very clear that they're not going to take marching orders from Washington on this. And I think that's a good thing. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, and it would never have happened if the neocons, if the Biden administration had not done this, starting back from the Obama administration. This was their pet project of these same people, Blinken and Sullivan and the others, and Victoria Nuland. This was their pet project for the past 9 years they've been working on. It never could have happened. You never would have seen, I don't think, you never would have seen Iran and Saudi Arabia mending fences. You never would have seen, as a previous speaker discussed, these sort of sinews growing into each other in Latin America and in Africa, India and China, not at each other's throats. It's amazing everything. They have the reverse Midas touch, right? Everything the neocons touch turns to crap, yet they never get punished for doing it. They just keep on and keep getting promoted and keep going upward. I mean, I just wonder if there's some point, you talked about propaganda. I mean, you have to prepare the American people, the big monster. Putin was a big monster. We have to defeat another Hitler. And once you do this, you get this kind of consent that's been manufactured, as Chomsky would say, and you go ahead. So there hasn't been a vote. What there's been is massive propaganda. And then America wakes up with the hangover. Oh, my God, $100 billion is gone, and I can't buy a loaf of bread. Thanks a lot. And that's why you're seeing the numbers go south in America, with 3 out of 4 Republicans saying, I don't want to spend another penny in Ukraine. But they got what they wanted at first, and they used propaganda to do it.
Yeah, you know, Bruce, it's what you talk, speaking about propaganda, it's something I've noticed, particularly when it comes to Ukraine, when there are things said that you can't take back, okay? When you call someone Hitler, you can't sit down at the table and talk with him. See, this is a self-defeating process right here, and that's what makes this so scary, is that there's not going to be, from Washington's point of view, negotiations mean you surrender, okay? But the Russians will never do that. And that's why I think we live in an extremely dangerous time. Bruce.
I want to go into space for a moment. You know, the United States has been filling up lower Earth orbit, LEO, with Starlink satellites launched by Elon Musk's company. These satellites have been used by the Pentagon to give military communications, right, and targeting of Russian soldiers and civilian targets in the Donbass. Well, right now, what's happening is these orbits are becoming totally congested and filled with Western military satellites, and Russia and China are being excluded from using lower Earth orbit as this parking lot becomes overly crowded. China is now saying they want to launch 13,000 satellites into lower Earth orbit, but the U.S. again is rushing to fill that available spaces. Space is now directly involved in warfighting, and it, as we talk about expanding the war and widening the war, I really fear that the United States is going to move this war into space. And if that happens, with this growing congestion in lower Earth orbit, NASA scientists fear the Kessler syndrome will kick into effect. This means cascading collisions that before long essentially destroys much of what is orbiting the Earth. And when that happens, GPS, cell phones, air traffic control, weather prediction, internet banking, the whole works goes dark, goes black on the Earth below. So we're in this really dangerous moment right now, and the West is pushing it, not wanting to talk, not wanting to negotiate, not wanting to back off. The neocons, it's been referred to several times now, they are running this show. Biden is not the president. He's just a puppet that is doing a poor job in his role. But this is the dangerous moment we're in today.
You know, Daniel, you know, I'm going to ask a kind of a provocative question, but I think we have to talk about it. Do you see Article 5 being invoked at some point in time? Because I'm glad that Bruce brought up these satellite things. When satellites are, American intelligence is being used to have missiles target civilians in Russia, there's a certain point where the Russians are going to say, well, we can't tolerate these satellites. Then, I don't know if Article 5 applies, that's kind of nuanced, but I fear that we're treading on that ground. Daniel.
Yeah, it's getting very close. I mean, we saw the attacks in Crimea against the Kilo class and the landing ship just last week, I think it was. That was all facilitated by Global Hawk that was right outside the territory. At what point is the escalation? I mean, the calculus of the neocons in D.C. is that because Putin has not responded, he won't respond. I mean, would you want to gamble the civilization on such an insane thing? So I had said a couple of times in our program as well that maybe the escalation, the sort of a symmetrical escalation, would be to take out a Global Hawk. You're not killing a pilot, you're not killing anyone, but you're making it very clear we will not tolerate you targeting our ships in Crimea with these Global Hawks over the Black Sea. That may be the next move that they make. The question is, what will NATO do at that point?
Yeah, Wilmer, one of the things that really bothers me is that, you know, they're setting a precedent for invoking Article 5. And these are elites doing it. You know, I mean, if it were ever done, I don't know what the reaction would be. Certainly the United States doesn't want missiles flying over America, but would they object them having missiles flying over Europe? I wonder.
Well, no, they won't mind having missiles flying over Europe. They already blew up Nord Stream 2 pipeline.
Good point.
So they don't mind blowing stuff up in Europe. And I think, you mentioned Article 5 a couple of times, and the only thing that I think we can hope with Article 5 is that the other members of NATO, because one of the things that Article 5 says is that other NATO members will respond as they see fit.
Right.
So what one hopes with an Article 5 response is that Germany would send water, and France would send baguettes, and Britain would send bangers. That's what we hope would happen.
Yeah, but don't you think then as a result of that, I tend to agree with you, but then we would have forced regime change in Paris, forced regime change in Rome, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I don't think they, go ahead, finish up, last few seconds, well, go ahead.
This is the optimist in me.
Yes.
And just quickly, you mentioned that it's important to remember, Russia can't trust the United States. The Minsk agreements were a fraud. Biden ignored Russia's demands in Geneva. And look at what the United States did with the JCPOA. And just as we send Iran their money, we impose more sanctions.
As I've said, I've said from the get-go, gentlemen, there's going to be no negotiated end. The Russians will end this all by themselves, okay? And we'll talk about what that world will look like at another time. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Brunswick, and in Lake Jackson. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.